Good morning. You listen to FloridaDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, my guest is John Ball, a managing analyst with Stifel Nicolaus. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kemp. How are you?
I'm well. I thought we'd talk, now that all the publicly traded flooring companies have reported, to tell our audience a little bit about the performance. Before we get to that, though, I'd like to mention I saw just recently where you now are picking up both Home Depot and Lowe's, and you're going to be following their progress as well, aren't you?
I am. I'm excited about it. Obviously, two big, growing companies that have, among other things, a meaningful presence in floor covering. So I'm excited about the challenge.
Our take on that, in their departments that have flooring, they have some other things in there that make it difficult to exactly know where they are. So when we take out some of the things that are in there other than flooring, we think they both do about 5% or a little over 5% of their revenue in flooring.
Yeah, the obfuscation is an important skill set when you're dealing with the financial community and people like me who are trying to dissect every single number. Yes, there are probably, there's things like joint compound, there's some accessory items and whatnot, but any way you slice it, they are meaningful flooring players, and they call it a core competency and one they're committed to strategically long term.
I think one of the things they struggle with the most is installation. And, we've used them as the poster child for discounting that important function within the floor covering, because they teach the consumer that it's a menial task by saying we'll put that in for free.
You're right. I think installation is a critical piece of the job. I think, candidly, they understand that. And that may run a little counter, right, to the promotion of giving a service that you supposedly value away for free. But I put that more in a bucket of that's just what they think resonates as a promotion with customers. But they understand that their weakness over the years has been the installation process. And they're moving slowly, I think, Kemp, because that's where the consumer's moving, from DIY, do-it-yourself, to DIFM, which is do-it-for-me.
Yeah.
That means install. And they understand they've got to get better at that. And I think while the independent floor covering dealers will in some ways always have an advantage, I do think that gap is probably narrowed a little bit from some of the early days when I had my own personal experiences with home centers and service installation. And I do think they're improving, working with really partner type vendors who are improving as well to provide better service, because really that's where this is going. I mean, you can go order anything on Amazon, right? But how do you get advice into how to install it or actually get someone to install it for you? And that's their advantage, and of course, the reason why the independent floor covering dealers still survive to this day.
All right, so let's talk real quickly just about the four or five leading companies that are publicly traded. Start with Mohawk. Obviously, they had the best results. They continue to outperform every other quarter before. Talk a little bit about your take on them.
I think what you're seeing is the byproduct of years and years of not just acquisitions, but then spending capital on process, capacity, speed, innovation, whichever it may be, to make the acquired and then integrated companies stronger. Because I just don't frankly see much of an uptick in overall flooring demand. Not just here, but in many parts of the world where they operate. It's still a difficult market, and yet they post above average growth rates in most of the markets they compete in. Now, they're spending a lot of capital and a lot of energy to make that happen. It's not easy, but I think the fact that they're in a lot of these substrates that are growing and making investments in things like LVT and fiberglass vinyl sheet, where they've not been a player before, are good examples of how they continue to try to drive aggressively and be in all categories, but particularly in those categories that are growing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk. They also try to blur the lines the way they slice things up. But then North American flooring, which is 42% of their sales, their organic growth was up about 1%. And carpets in that. Carpets, while the unit sales are off, some money to be made in carpet right now.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of Jeff's strengths as CEO. He identified carpet as a low volume growth area. It's mm-hmm. proven to be a no volume growth area.
Right.
And how he was still going to generate cash and generate profits within that, the results bear that out. It's still a tough space to play in, but clearly, you know, we've got it down to two or three meaningful players, and their efforts on the cost side, not just input costs, but overhead, marketing, and whatnot. Jeff keeps a pretty tight rein on that. And so I think they're reporting record profitability in terms of margins in the carpet arena, despite fairly anemic volumes, which is impressive.
Okay. I noticed in ceramic, obviously, they're doing really well. They're the global leader there, and their sales were up 4%, excluding currency. Very successful.
Yeah. You know, I put the ceramic in a game of, you know, liken it to a game of gin rummy where you can pick up all of the discards. You know, when you look at their portfolio of businesses around the globe, they have such scale and so many different capabilities in terms of production, areas of distribution, you know, high-end tile, low-end tile. And I think what they're beginning to do is to maximize production of one type of product and then ship it where it makes sense to another region and get those plants to be. And it could be tax reasons, it could be currency reasons, it could be cost of labor or production. There are a whole host of reasons, but I really think you're seeing on the ceramic style, side of their business a global footprint that, you know, they're able to allocate. All right, we're going to make this porcelain here, we're going to make this high-end thing in Italy, and we're going to do this thing in North America, and certainly capital, and it's a capital-intensive business. Ceramic is one of their strengths, and they have built and will continue to be building sizable capacity and capability within the ceramic tiles globally.
That's right. They're just turning on a plant here in Tennessee, and let's just real quick, another comment. You know, they bought IVC for $1.2 billion, and they bought it right at the right time because that's one of the hottest categories, LVT. So that seemed to be a pretty wise decision, too. Let's keep moving so we can cover these companies. And the next one, I guess, is Armstrong, and it looked like their wood business was up just a little bit and their resilient business was down just a little bit, right?
Yeah, I'd say it was on the revenue-wise a little bit of a mixed quarter. They had a very strong first quarter where they, I think, pulled through some demand. Yeah, I think the big issue or the big question on Armstrong is you are seeing, and you just mentioned IVC, you're seeing increased competition on the resilient sheet business. And of course, LVT, we know what's going on with all the domestic production supplanting were largely imports heretofore. You know, it's putting pricing pressure on both those key categories for them in the resilient side of the business. Then the good news for Armstrong is they're bringing up the speed of the LVT line in Lancaster, and that will enable them ultimately to make product, not source it. And there should be a pretty nice trade-off in margin once that plant absorbs all of its overhead. You know, in the meantime, you do have price competition. It's not just Mohawk. There are others that have invested in this area as well. And, you know, there's still that question mark, I think, of where it's all going to shake out. We know the volume growth is there. We know the margins tend to be higher than commodity laminates and commodity vinyls, but that gap is arguably narrowing a little bit, and we don't really know where it's going to stop narrowing.
Mm-hmm. One of the highlights with them is their EBITDA number was up $1.5 million, which was up 22.6%, I think, from the same quarter the year before, right?
Yeah, and again, a very short history here as a standalone public entity opposed to spin, so rightly so, focused on expenses and did an excellent job in the quarter on that front.
All right, let's go to Tile a minute, T-I-L-E, which is Interface. They continue to do well on their margins, but both their sales and earnings were off a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think you know, part of this is to compare. We had in the prior year, they had some tough order comparison numbers. They've also had an account or two shift volume probably to the back half of the year from the first half. So there's been some issues there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have the European exposure and the Brexit concerns as it may affect the UK, which is 7% of their consolidated revenues. I don't know. I think it's been a little bit of a slowdown on the commercial activity in general. I don't know if I want to lay that off on the election concerns or GDP slowing and a general outlook for business. I don't know, a little more questioning that's played a role. You know, on the controllables, the margin front, they've done extremely well. Those gross margins are at very high levels historically, some of the highest they've ever reported, and that's encouraging.
Yeah, you point out some of these causes for a lack of consumer pool. And I think I was just talking to a dealer the other day who's not doing as well as he's done in years past. And he said that he thinks part of that is probably due to election year jitters.
You know, that's an easy one that everybody just grabs. I don't know. I don't spend too much of my day or my year worried about whether Hillary or Donald are going to be president. Yeah. But I do think there's a broader backdrop where, again, I know we've talked about this on prior interviews we've done, where, you know, the average American is still not seeing much of a recovery. You know, we are seeing home prices come up a little bit, and we're seeing home equity line borrowing against the home value rising a little bit, but they're gradual, and they're certainly nowhere close to where we had prior peak. And so it's somewhat of a fragile, slow recovery. There's just not a lot of confidence, either business confidence by executives running corporations or consumers. And, you know, this environment, frankly, we've had since the bust, and it hasn't really changed a lot, although a lot of politicians want you to think that things are better. There's still that intangible sense of fear or concern, I sense, that's very real.
Mm-hmm. So you think the second two quarters coming are going to be better than the first two for these flooring companies?
We'll probably see similar tone up, but gradually up is my best guess. Stuck with that forecast for a number of years. It seems to be playing out. Well, I'm not wildly bullish. I'm also not terribly negative camp. I mean, there's so many things. You know, one of the things that I'm excited about on the bullish side is the average age of the home just keeps going up. We're approaching 40 years. I think something like 65 to 70% of the homes have an age greater than 30 years. And these homes don't get better with age. So there's that pent-up demand to remodel, and it's just a question of when there's that confidence and or money to do the project. And if we really get some meaningful job improvement and or confidence, which probably go hand in hand, we could see a much more robust recovery. But, yeah, we're not going to see that before November. It's going to be pretty choppy up until then.
Okay, John, well, it's good to catch up with you. Thanks for your insight on these publicly traded flooring companies. Again, been talking to John Ball, managing analyst with Stifel Nicolaus, and you've been listening to Kemp Haar and FloridaLA.net.